Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Randall Fitzgerald. Alien in the Mirror is his work. We're talking about the George Clooney movie Solaris, which came out in 2002. And tell me a little bit more your thoughts, Randall.
Well, in this particular plot, the planet itself is a sentient entity that sort of recreates the memories of the humans that are visitors on a space station circling the planet have. And the planet is able to bring to life, for instance, dead people from the memories of George Clooney and the other characters. And it brings to mind the idea of a planetary mind. It's been active in science fiction, but now it's sort of infiltrating science fact. And let me give you a good example of that. In the February 2022 issue of the Science Journal, International Journal of Astrobiology, several astrophysicists from Arizona State University and the University of Rochester wrote a science article that was proposing that maybe cognitive activity is operating on a planetary scale, Earth included, that the sum total of all of the intelligence on this planet, all the human intelligence, all of the various levels of animal intelligence, even intelligence, however one might define that at the level of plants, that the sum total of it together could be a planetary type of sentient of being intelligence. And what these astrophysicists were proposing is that somehow science needs to figure out how to do a search through the universe of using the Webb telescope and other means to find the signatures for an evolving group or mind planetary intelligence. Now, this was a NASA grant that funded this particular study done this year. There was an interesting conclusion at the end of this study. The scientists concluded, and I'm going to quote here from the particular paper, they indicated that, quote, Earth's planetary intelligence operates via a feedback loop that's global in scale, coordination, and operation. And that if we begin to recognize the interactions that are occurring between various levels of intelligence on our own planet, we'll be in a better position to eventually recognize global minds emerging on other planets where extraterrestrial life may have evolved or may be evolving. This is very similar to this idea of Solaris that was popular in this science fiction movie.
And it's just so many people have come up with so many thoughts and ideas about extraterrestrial life. Jacques Vallée wrote your foreword to your book, and he's one of the best.
He is indeed. And concerning animal intelligence, for instance, Jacques was one of the first of the UFO researchers and writers to propose that if we ever hope to really truly communicate with an extraterrestrial intelligence as one species to another, we have to begin by learning how to communicate with intelligent life forms that already exist on our planet. How can we communicate, for instance, with all the primate species? How do we communicate with the intelligent parrots and crows? You know, look at the octopus, for instance. In all of its arms, it has a mini brain. You know, the octopus has often been hypothesized to be an alien being on this planet because it seems so out of place in the context of other life forms. So Jacques proposed that we needed to have sort of a Manhattan-type project in order to be able to unite biologists and neuroscientists and all the various academic disciplines to begin to truly find answers to how we begin to communicate with the intelligent species already on the planet.
you believe that we are never going to get to the bottom line of UFOs and ETs until we bring in a different kind of approach. Is that correct?
Yes, and it's that holistic sort of approach that Jacques Vallée is proposing, to bring together all these various disciplines, because if we think in terms of the phenomenon, whatever it is, and I always put it in journalistic terms because I'm still a journalist and I try to evaluate all the different points of view, all the different theories and types of evidence and so forth. And in doing that, it always has seemed to me that in order to communicate from one species to another, that we can't look at it from a top-down sort of approach. We can't assume and hope that an advanced species is going to already have figured out how to communicate with us. We need to have, as a species, some sort of process underway that where we're already thinking in terms of not just through radio telescope signals, which we've been doing through SETI for decades, but rather, again, using species that are intelligent on our planet as a prototype, using them as models to begin thinking in terms of how we really, one species to another, will communicate important information in the future.
Randall, you brought John Keel from Mothman Prophecies into the picture. Tell us about that.
Yes, he's another one whose books that I have read and I summarize in Alien in the Mirror, in the chronology of the development of ideas and evidence. So John Keel, like me, was a journalist. He wrote in the 1960s and 1970s. His most famous book, as you point out, was The Mothman Prophecies, made into that movie with Richard Gere.
Yep.
The second book he wrote was UFOs, Operation Trojan Horse. And the third one was The Eighth Tower. And in those books, he speculated that UFOs are primarily electromagnetic in origin and have an ability to manipulate matter. And as a result, they masquerade as planes or balloons or pretty much anything they want to morph into in order to deceive humans. John Keel believed that the intelligence that was directing this phenomenon wasn't necessarily extraterrestrial. He thought it was an intelligent energy field, and this field helps explain not only the UFO phenomenon, but religious miracles, visitations attributed to angels, you know, everything that we could think of as part of the paranormal throughout human history. So there was another aspect to Keel, which I found interesting. He thought the UFO phenomenon would never really be solved because it was a kind of cosmic joke perpetuated by entities who have always been around to confuse us and to frighten humans. And in a certain sense, it's like they're experimenting with ways to undermine our sanity because we can never quite figure out their intentions or the intentions of this intelligence behind the phenomenon. So ultimately, Keel believed that there was a super spectrum of energies that sort of span the electromagnetic realm. And this accounts for the intelligent energy field that's trying to manipulate us.
Tell us about the tie-in between the Princeton University Global Consciousness Project and some of the things you've written about.
Yes, I tried to link all of this evidence together from, you know, this February 2022 study by the astrobiologist and then the ideas of Ivan Sanderson and Carl Jung and so forth about the global mind. And I was looking for examples of true-to-life science experiments that might have shown the parameters or at least the shadow impact of a global mind phenomenon. And the best example I could find was a series of experiments done at Princeton University at the School of Engineering starting in about 1979. And what they were investigating, they called it the Global Consciousness Project, appropriately. They were using random event generators. They're very similar to random number generators in computers. And they were testing the ability at first of individuals to mentally be able to influence the random number output, the distribution of these various computers. And it was sort of a mind over matter experiment. And they graduated from working with individuals to working with groups of people. And so they came up with the idea in the 1980s to have scattered around the globe 36 computers altogether that had these random event generators working that were spewing out these random numbers constantly for months and years on end. And what they wanted to do was to measure whether or not the sum total of the attention of human consciousness on world events could affect at the subatomic level the distribution of these random numbers in these computers. And so they began to look at various events, starting with, and this was the biggest event, of course, September 11th, 2001, the terrorist events in New York.
They had a spike then.
Washington, D.C. And yes, you probably had guests discussing this on your program.
Yes.
There was a large statistical spike in that second-by-second data stream from these computers throughout the planet on the morning of September 11th. And it was an effect that seemed far beyond chance, which seemed to be the global mind at work. So they began doing this experiment in a much more vigorous fashion after that, once they got this initial persuasive evidence, and they started finding similar spikes in the data being recorded for other dramatic news days. Now, for instance, before midnight on New Year's 2000, the Y2K transition, there was a huge spike. There were huge spikes with the death of Princess Diana in Britain, for instance. And these spikes, when they were graphed, were certainly beyond chance by any reasonable person examining the data would have to assume that something was at work that we couldn't really explain in conventional terms. But the scientists that were involved at Princeton they were quite aware of Carl Jung's hypothesized collective unconscious, and they were wondering whether maybe what they were recording was sort of like a seismograph charting earthquake activities, but in this case, it was activity in the collective human consciousness.
It was amazing, wasn't it?
It was indeed, and it still is. And of course, the skeptics, and there were many in the science realm, who claimed that the experiments really were the result of ignoring the laws of physics, so they had to be anomalies. They tried, the skeptics did, to replicate the results, but they weren't successful, and there were a lot of reasons why they weren't successful. For one, they didn't have 36 or 37 computers scattered in countries around the globe. They had much more limited experiments. And secondly, they went in with the old confirmation bias, where you go in claiming or thinking that something is impossible, and thus the results you're going to get are going to be null and void. And of course, what do you end up with? You end up with results that are null and void and can't replicate the original results. But it still is, George, I think probably the most persuasive science evidence for this idea of a planetary consciousness.
Randall Fitzgerald with us. We're going to take calls with him next hour here on Coast to Coast, just in a few minutes, as a matter of fact. His website, alieninthemirror.com, and his latest book is Alien in the Mirror, Extraterrestrial Contact Theories and Evidence. In your opinion, ETs, other planetary systems, or somewhere else?
I'm going to act on intuition here, not on logic, because I try to apply critical thinking to everything and as a journalist, but intuitively, I feel like it's interdimensional.
Much like Jacques Vallée believes.
Yes, yes, I've come around to his way of thinking and his perspective on this, not just as a result of reading all of his books, which are all brilliant.
Oh, they sure are. Randall, stay with us. We'll come back and take calls with you next on Coast to Coast.